Good evening and welcome to Masterful Choices, where choice really matters. I'm Monique Chapman, your host. I converse with established and upcoming conscious leaders in the fields of human potential, intuition, spirituality, and metaphysics, providing empowering information for you to live a five-star balanced life. When you were born, you came to Earth with everything you needed to make life a success. Together, let's discover your pathway to greater success. To find out more about me, upcoming show guests, the classes, consultations, and energy, and holistic healings that I provide, visit my website, MoniqueChapman.com. Now, I've been told by my clients that I keep it real while providing accurate information and profound deep healings as they face the lessons they agreed to learn in this particular lifetime. I would love for you to remember to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and connect with me on LinkedIn. My opt-in newsletter, Healing News, is available through my website, MoniqueChapman.com, or you can join from my Facebook page. Tonight, I have a very, very special show. Dr. Anders Nielsen is with me. He's the author of The Gentle Way of the Heart, and we're going to talk about that more in a few moments. I'm not taking calls this hour, okay? Not taking calls. So sit back, relax, and decide to join me by, you know, listening with your good listening ears and gaining some valuable information that I know will help you tremendously as you navigate the energies that are on Earth right now. The book that we are discussing this evening, The Gentle Way of the Heart, describes how we can create a harmonious world when we live our lives from love and accept everything as it is and everyone for who they are. A sophisticated spiritual practice, the gentle way calls for a willingness to overcome inner resistance and change the perception of our human nature. To those who succeed comes the rewards of a world transformed through the light of love. Born in Sweden, Dr. Anders Nielsen received a PhD in physics from Uppsala University and has engaged in award-winning fundamental research in physics and chemistry for decades. In 2000, he moved to California and became a professor of photon science at Stanford University. Currently studying the fundamental properties and structures of liquid water and artificial photosynthesis, he has authored or co-authored numerous scientific papers. In parallel and independent from his role as a Stanford professor, he has nurtured a strong spiritual awakening guided by his own internal voice, and he has led spiritual workshops in Sweden for many, many years. Welcome to Masterful Changes, Anders.
Thank you so much, Monique. I'm very delighted that I can participate in the show.
Oh, I am so glad that you can. The Gentle Way of the Heart. The book is truly gentle. Folks, he's a scientist, but there's nothing scientific-y, if you will, about this book. It's very easy to read. It's heartfelt as you read it. And while I was reading it, I felt my energy shift. So you have that opportunity by purchasing this book. It's available everywhere. And learning for yourself. Again, the title, The Gentle Way of the Heart. Discovering the Light Within. Anders, you're such a preeminent scientist. What allowed you to fall back from the scientific community and explore the metaphysical part of love and life?
I was pretty much a very fundamental scientist, I would say, like over 20 years ago, where I, at that time, coming out of my PhD, I believe that if it can't be described by science, it's not real. The only approach to life is the scientific. But then I had a period of rather intense emotional turmoil, and it was very hard for me. Yeah. So I started to go into therapy and look within, and then discover a completely different aspect of myself. It was a little bit like pushing a button, and everything came forward very quickly. And it's an ongoing process, of course, for life, but it was a very rapid change. And then I discovered all this, and I have been evolving with it, and I realized the importance or what I discover, and I want to share that to the world. I want to share that to people. That's why I also wrote this book. So I also kept it actually on purpose to be very far away from a scientific description, because I think sometimes books are written with a little bit too much in the mind, and I know this very well being a scientist, but I wanted to write this book a little bit also from the heart.
Okay, well, you have definitely written it from the heart. Now, you know, your subtitle is Discover the Light Within. How do people discover their light?
The light within is, the light in the book is, I could call it a little bit of a metaphor. It is for our true self. I call it the true self, who we really are. And that light, using the metaphor of light, means that it's something that has no beginning, no end. The light goes with the speed of light very fast. It, so to speak, is eternal. And therefore, it's a metaphor to really demonstrate for us that we are not of this world. We only experience this world. And that is to really tune in to discover that part, that we really are having a very interesting experience being as a human, so to speak. To discover the light, I describe in the book, I think it's particular two steps that is very important. The first step is to enter what I call beingness. And beingness is when we can completely relax into discovering that we actually exist. We exist without having to do anything. We can just sit on the chair, be completely quiet, we exist. We don't need to pretend anything. We don't need to have an identity in terms of a profession or believing in certain things. We just exist. And so the first step is just to, so to speak, found that groundness, that beingness within ourselves, that we actually exist. And I outline a few exercises how to do that. And when we have found that base in us that we actually exist, the sensation that we exist without having to be anyone or do anything, we can then do a little bit of an internal exercise to imagine behind our chest that there is a light there. And we can, many people can feel a warmness in the chest.
Yeah.
Usually when they are excited or are feeling happy or with the loved ones or looking at the child, taking their first stumbling steps or whatever it is. And we can feel that warmness. And it's to tune into that warmness and imagine that there is a doorway in there and we can let this light that we actually have as a metaphor come forward and shine out, both within ourselves but also to the world.
Well, Anders, what stops people from tuning in? I don't know if it was the chapter on beingness or another chapter in your book, but I remember you saying, you know, take some time and you like go to the park or a quiet place and just be and just, you know, observe. What stops people from truly getting into the energy, if you will, that's surrounding them?
I think it's a lot of stress. And the stress is often created by fear. That we believe that we have to be in a certain way, we need to achieve all the time. We are worried about the future. I was thinking about it actually today because I'm right now in Stockholm in Sweden and I came from university and I took the subway. And I looked at the on the subway. Everybody was on their so to speak, phones, checking the internet, emails, or everybody is very busy all the time. So we in the current society doesn't really give time to sink in into this beingness. We are all the time busy, worried, or we have to be entertained by media or music or anything. And so we need to allow ourselves to just be.
Yeah, and it's amazing because, you know, what you have just spoken about, I've witnessed so many times. I remember there was a Valentine's Day, and I actually went up to visit my son when he was living up in Sacramento. And we went out to dinner, and it was amazing, the couples sitting at the table. And, I mean, it's Valentine's, so you don't think everyone out there is like mother and son, right? Since they're the same age, you know, you kind of assume couples, everybody's on their cell phone instead of talking to each other. And I was like, wow, this is supposed to be a romantic evening for, you know, those in love, and, you know, you'll be out and enjoy each other's company, but everyone was on their cell phones. It was like they were afraid to be either with themselves, or even what I think is more dangerous, is afraid to be with another person. They have to have an audience, if you will.
Yes, and I think there is this pressure for many people that they are afraid to be alone, just afraid to be with themselves. Therefore, they are seeking entertainment. And one of the reasons why many people are afraid to be with themselves is because they might feel that within themselves there is pain, there is fear. Fear usually comes up because we have pain within ourselves that we don't want to feel. And we get afraid when something might remind us that we have this pain within. Pain generated often as we were a child or something. And so an important step also for bringing in the light within ourselves is actually to transform this fear and release that pain. And usually that is from a realization that we are not the pain. It's only something that we actually experience. And if we allow to experience the pain, it will become free, and it will just move. It will sort of transform within ourselves as we allow to feel it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this ability or inability that we have, I should say, to transform the F word starts when we're young? Because I remember in your book, if I remember correctly, you said something along the lines that fear creeps in the first time that we feel that we're not accepted.
Yeah, I mean, usually as a child, we are expected to be loved, and I think every child would have moments when they actually experience that they are not being loved, and love in how I define it is simply that there is no barriers to anything. We are all mm-hmm. connected. We accept each other. We accept everybody. We accept our experience. That actually is love. We don't put up any barriers. So when the child, therefore, at one point feels that there is a barrier, it becomes very, very frightening mm-hmm. and very, very difficult. And often we have all experience that, and we can't often not handle that situation, and we therefore shuffle it within ourselves and try to bury it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But when we bury it, it's still there, and it's peaking, or it's trying to get our attention through our life, and that's why we are feeling the fear, so to speak, to respond to situations in such a way that we wouldn't feel this.
Yeah, well, it seems like once we bury it, then that's more stress to cover up what we buried, and it just, you know, mushrooms out of control. Now, in your book, you talk about imaginary fear. What is imaginary fear?
I make a distinction there because I think many people think also that fear can be very helpful. Let's say in California, you're going out on a hike, and suddenly you have a rattlesnake on the trail,
uh-huh.
and you might have a fearful reaction of that. So the fear is warning us that something is threatening to us, and so the real fear is the fear that is related to something that happens in the present moment, that is a truthful threat to our existence or threat to our body, and it can also be related to that some other one, some a dear one, or actually even a stranger is in a very difficult situation, life-threatening situation, and we also might have a fearful reaction to that, which eventually lead to that we want to take action. Mm-hmm. Imaginary fear, on the other hand, is a fearful response that we think is a threat to us, but it's not a real threat to us in the present moment. It is only that it reminds us that we had experienced pain in the past. So let me give you an example that let's say you have been criticized a lot as a child. Let's say you had quite hostile parents that all often criticized you and you felt that you couldn't live up to their standard. And you then in life later on are suddenly hearing a little bit of a critique from your boss or from some of your friends, and you will be immediately going to be very defensive and you will feel very uncomfortable. Your stomach will sort of cramp up on you. You might even get angry because they actually said that. And that is a reaction to that you still have that fear within you, or let's say, the pain within you that created the fearful reaction to actually having a little bit of a feedback that could be interpreted as negative criticism. And so that is then an imaginary fear, so to speak, because it is not a threat to you in the present moment. Uh-huh. It is only a reminder of the pain within you.
Hmm. Okay. And then we can bring up that pain and heal that pain if we choose?
Yes, yes. And I think there are a lot of therapies, you know, that people can do. It's all about usually to bring out some of that pain. Mm-hmm. What I write about in the book is that we can do something as we are dealing with that pain or let's say what happened in the past, which can be very, very helpful, which is also based on my own experience, facing my own pain and facing my own fear, is to become intimate with the pain, intimate with the sensation of fear. Mm-hmm. And what I mean with that is that usually we are very afraid of the fear. So as that appears or arises in us, we want to run away and we lose our awareness of the present moment and something else is takes over and we respond in a certain way. We might get angry or upset or frustrated or many different reactions. And we are not actually particularly aware of the present moment when this happened. We might later on realize, oh my God, I did this, I said this, and we feel a little bit guilty or even ashamed sometimes, which is also a fearful reaction. But when we become intimate with it, we don't push it away, we bring it towards us. We are no longer afraid of the fear and by becoming intimate with it, and we allow it to coexist within us. And the next step with that is after we have opened up to have the experience of the light and love in our heart, we can actually go in there and I call it keep one hand in the light mm-hmm. of your heart, and then you reach out with the other hand to the pain and the fear, and you allow the pain and the fearful reaction to coexist as you also feel the light and love in your heart.
Okay.
So they have you have them, both of them together, and then the pain, you accept the pain, and it slowly can start to dissolve, and eventually it will be burned away, so to speak, by the love and light in your heart. Mm-hmm. It will eventually win. It might take minutes or it might take many years.
Okay, well, it seems like your process allows people to become in balance or in harmony. I mean,
because
in my opinion, balance, harmony, it's not, you know, static. It's always fluid, and you're always adjusting to the energies that are surrounding you.
Yeah. So what we usually do is that when, and I'm still doing that, there is no reason to strive for perfection, is that I am getting better at it. But it is that we will always encounter situations that will be challenging for us. That's part of being human. But we don't allow this to take over completely. We keep one hand in the light of our heart.
Okay. Now, when you say this, does that mean that if we practice this, and you have, by the way, folks, he has exercises at the end of each chapter, meditation exercises that you can do that are not long, that it's not hard, and if you take it to heart, it will shift your energy. But when we do this, and I forgot where I was going, so let's scrap that. Oh, my goodness. I am so sorry, Anders. Well, we are speaking with Anders Nielsen, Dr. Anders Nielsen, and he is the author of The Gentle Way of the Heart, Discover the Light Within. This book is available everywhere. And if you're truly on a healing journey, this is a book for you. It's helped me in my life. This is a keeper, and you guys know I don't say that often to my audience that this stays permanently on the bookshelf, but this one does. Now, Anders, we talked about, you know, a few things here, but let's back up a little bit, because the first part of your book, you talk about the true self, and I think that's truly the underpinnings of who we are. So let's talk a bit about our true self. And first of all, how do we identify who we are? Because so many of us identify with either being a mom or whatever our job title is or the neighbor, whatever. I think that we have difficulty discovering who we truly are internally.
I know this is a lifelong process to do that. But it's to recognize that we often put up an identity. And the identity is that, as you say, you are a mom or you have a certain job and so on. And we live in that identity. But the true self is the one, or is actually who we really are, that experience our life.
Mm-hmm.
It is the one that experience that we actually are putting up an identity. So important, let's say an important ingredient in this book is actually, I think all the way through, is to discover the true self. And I'm going through many different facets of it in terms of this, but as we talked about beingness, when you sink into this beingness and just can be having the sensation to exist, you are your true self.
Okay.
And the same when you are in the light in your heart, you are the true self. On the contrary, when you are responding to fear and you don't allow to become intimate with it, it takes you over. You are not your true self. Then there's another piece of you that I call the false self that takes mm-hmm. over, so to speak. But everybody has experienced the true self, and they know it. It is when you feel very content. You might be hiking and seeing the beautiful view of the valley. You have nothing, you're not thinking about anything. You're just enjoying that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might be touched by beautiful music that gives you goosebumps all over your body. And you're just resonating within your true self. Or you're looking at the loved ones. Or we all have this experience when we are our true self.
Okay. Now, you touched a bit on the false self. What is the false self?
The false self, I call it the false self because some people might call it the ego or the egoistic self. But I use the word false self to make it a little bit more clean so nobody has a sort of preconditioned view of it. The false self is when we have experienced this pain, let's say as a child or maybe late in life, and we are trying to do our best to not experience the pain. And at that moment, there is like a split. The sub-personality is sort of split off from us,
mm-hmm.
that I call the false self. And the false self is acting in order to not feel the pain. So when we are in stress, we are typically operating out of our false self.
Mm-hmm.
And we might be impatient. We might be afraid of being criticized. we might feel that we don't have enough, we are feeling like a victim for circumstances and so on. And this is typically when the false self is taking over.
Okay. In your book, you also talk a lot about choices, and choices is something that I am pretty, you know, up on and truly appreciate. Why is it that it's important that we make a choice, and why is it understanding that if we don't make a choice, it's the same energy?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that our life progresses forward by the choices we make. We are making every day an enormous amount of choices. There are some of them are very small, or seem to be very small, and sometimes we are making very big choices that will have a change, completely life-changing choice, so to speak. But but we can notice within ourselves how we are making these choices. If we are, let's say, encounter a situation where we have to make a choice, we could stop for a few seconds and tune in within ourselves to be connected, what I call this light within, or feeling a little bit into beingness.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point, make the choice where we could have the sensation that we have a warmness in our heart where we feel that this would be the right choice to make. Or we make a choice from the false self, where we might be frustrated or angry or upset and so on, and then we are making a choice from the false self. Because one choice puts us in a situation that eventually makes our life to progress forward in a certain way until we have to make another choice and then another choice and another choice. So if we are operating from our false self, usually the choices we make are exactly going in a circle. They are repeating itself, and many things are repeating itself. It's just repeating and repeating until we make the discovery that we need to make a different type of choice.
It's kind of like watching that movie Groundhog Day.
Yes.
Well, that, you know, it brings it down to that we have choices and we can make them. And I think that sometimes, though, when people make a choice, they feel that if it doesn't work out the way that they envision, that they have failed. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, also, I know that I have been through in my own life, often been frustrated that things didn't work out how I envisioned it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, some years afterwards or some time afterwards, I realized that if that choice had happened, maybe that wouldn't have actually been that particularly good.
Mm.
And I come to the realization that all the outcomes in my life that I actually brought me to this point where I am right now have actually been pretty good. Even though I actually felt at the time frustrated or angry or upset or disappointed, I realized that the universe or the divine, so to speak, which we are all part of, and we are actually, made the right outcome. And some of the outcome might be very frustrating for us because it's happening so we can actually experience our pain, which then allows us to heal it, simply.
Mm.
And so on. So usually we can appreciate our life journey even though it's been hard, but it actually has brought us to the place where we are today.
Okay. Well, what do you say to the people who, you know, and they truly believe this, that life should just be easy, there shouldn't be any pain, there shouldn't be any, I guess work would be the operative word here, that they're just supposed to flow through life, and if not, life is not perfect.
Yeah, I mean, let me take an analog here, which is also in the book, a little bit what I call life as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So if we now take in that we are a true self, and the true self exists beyond time and space. is eternal. It's something of not this world, it's something we experience. And if we then think about as an analog that our true self is a little bit experienced life like we go to the movie theater. And we go to the movie theater and we watch a movie and we have an experience of the movie. But we are always feeling safe because we don't believe that the movie is real. We are feeling safe as we are sitting in the chair in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. But if the movie would be everything is easy, flowing through, nothing really happens, nothing challenges and so on, I think nobody would go see or watch that movie.
Right.
It would be pretty boring. Or if we would know the storyline all the time, we would know exactly what's going to happen in the future in the movie, it wouldn't be exciting either. And it's the same with us in our life, that our true self wants to evolve, wants to experience things. But the true self, just like in the analog with the movie theater, it knows that it is beyond time and space, and it experienced the life, but it wants to have a life that actually is progressing and is really getting to experience itself to its fullest, and wants to have interesting emotions and interesting things that happens in the life, and wants to also be where a piece of ourselves doesn't know what's coming around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Well, there should always be some surprise in our life.
Yes.
Yeah, it kind of wakes us back up, whether it's a pleasant surprise or what we consider an unpleasant surprise. It's always good to have surprise. But Andrews, how does the concept of forgiveness fit into the gentle way of the heart?
It goes back to this very simple thing of acceptance. Acceptance becomes the same as love. Acceptance means that we don't have a barrier to anything, so we accept ourselves. When we accept ourselves, we love ourselves. We have no regret, we have no shame, we have no guilt, we accept ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when we accept other people for who they are, we have no barriers to them. That can even be towards strangers or anything. And that's the same also with respect to the past. When we accept that we are in this particular moment, and we accept how we arrived there, and we accept the past, we put no barriers onto the past, because we can't do anything about the past. The past is the past.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot change. So we accept the past, and that actually becomes the same as forgiveness.
Hmm. So because you accept it, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go back and play, if you will, in that same energy. It's just more of an, okay, that's what happened. That's the way it was. Let me move on with
yeah.
your...
So you accept it.
Okay. The feelers being up for you know, sensing energy when it's not right and taking the appropriate action. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
No, go ahead.
It sounds very easy, but all of us know that it can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the more further along your spiritual path you are, the more difficult lessons come for you to, you know, conquer and then turn around and teach others, which is always good. In your perception, what is love?
Love is when you don't have barriers to anything and you accept who you are, others, and your reality. That becomes love. And I also paint a picture in the book where I call the three facets of love.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have any barriers to anything. So I paint a picture of what I call the concept of love, which is the perception of the truth. And the truth is maybe not as rigid as we think. The second one is the feeling of love, which is when we are having a compassion or a heartfelt connection with people. And the third is the experience of love, and that is when we are working in oneness with all of existence, with the universe. It's like we are moving in synchronicity with everything around. We are not independent. We are moving together with everything in the world.
Okay. Now, as we move together and we become one with this world, how do we truly fit into, let's say, what's going on in Syria right now? You know, we're bombing the I prefer to call it ISIL, not ISIS. I'm not going to disrespect the goddess. But how do we fit in with that if we're thinking, oh, I'm a good person, I don't like violence and all of that? So how do we fit into the oneness of what I'm going to label as the negativity of war?
I think there is a first very important step, and that is to realize that all people in the world have the light within. Also, the people in did you say ISIL? ISIL?
Yeah, I said ISIL and not ISIS.
Yes, I know.
It bothers me.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that one. But with ISIL, these people also have the light within. And they are operating from what they believe to be the truth, and many probably are operating from an enormous amount of false self, which collectively together become like an evil force. But what is important to recognize is that even though they are doing all these things, we still accept them for who they are as someone who has the light within. So we accept them as that, but we don't agree with their actions. We don't agree what they are doing. So we don't see it as a hateful relationship towards them, because simply they don't know what they are doing. You can think a little bit in that way. I often paint that a little bit in the book, when someone is acting out in a violent way to us, or in a very unpleasant way, you can look at that person and realize that as a metaphor, not literally, but as a metaphor, it's a little bit like they are possessed by a demon, which in this case is their false self. But behind that, there is actually a wonderful person that has the light there. And this person is, of course, suffering tremendously by actually not being in touch with that light and love within them. They are acting out of this demon. And so we therefore accept them as being someone who, like we are, is actually part of the divine, having the light within. But they are acting out not from that aspect. They are completely acting out of their false self. And of course, when people are acting out from their false self and trying to harm us or harm other people, we have to defend ourselves in such a way that we don't cause harm, no harm is caused to us or other people. But whatever, which way we choose to respond to this and act out is only to defend ourselves, at the same time recognize that these people also are beautiful beings within, but they have lost their connection, so to speak. Now comes the question, how should we act out and how should we do it and so on, which I think we always have to look at each specific situation, how to do it. But of course, we should always do that in the most, or let's say in the least harmful way to other people. But as we do it, we should also keep this in mind, that we are speaking to their true self of these other people who are acting out in this way. Because when we can meet even people who are acting out violently from the false self, if we don't act out from our own false self towards their false self, we will in that situation, we will have an escalation of violence and aggression. If we instead act out from our true self and trying to reach the other people's true self, we usually actually dissolve or transcend a little bit of the aggression and violence. But we cannot do it in such a way where we cause harm to us or other people.
Okay. very well said. It needs to be something that is, you know, productive and a win-win for everybody, if you will. Go ahead. You started to say something.
The other thing I just wanted to say is that many people, we are fed today by the media, and the media usually feed us with negativity. They feed us with that there is a very scary world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there is things which is not, that needs to be transformed in the world. But we have to realize also that there is a lot of good things in the world, and we should not forget that. We usually don't report the good things, but there is an enormous progress in the world, and if we look at what's happening in the last 50, 60 years, I mean, from the Second World War and onwards, we have actually moved a lot forward. There is much less poverty in the world. I think the poverty in Asia has halved what it used to be like 30, 40 years ago. Africa is on the move. All the dictatorships are nearly all gone in South America. And we don't have that iron curtain any longer in Europe and so on. Mm-hmm. So there is a tremendous progress being made. And let's remember that as well as we are dealing with these difficult challenges in our time, so we don't completely get swamped in this negativity, because that's going to bring out the false self in us.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Very, very well said. Well, folks, we have been listening to Dr. Anders Nielsen. He's the author of The Gentle Way of the Heart. Anders, do you have a website people can connect with?
Yes, it's going to be up hopefully very, very soon. It's gentleway.me.
Okay, so gentleway.me, M-E, right?
ME, yes.
Okay.
And it will be up. It will be up very, very soon.
Okay. And are you doing any speaking engagements in the near future?
I will do. I'm planning on doing that. It will come, and it will be as that will happen. It will be also posted on the website.
Okay. And it'll happen when it's supposed to. I absolutely love it. He stays in the present moment, folks. So do get the book. As I said, the book is a keeper for me. You guys know I rarely say that. This is a book that is going to assist you on your path with shifting your energy and emboldening your life. Dr. Nielsen, thank you so much for being with me. To the audience, thank you for being with me tonight. I'm truly honored, grateful, and I appreciate your time and attention. When you're ready to shift the energy in your life to the master level, give me a call at 888-240-6057, or you can email me at monique@moniquechapman.com. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. And remember, the most important choice that you make is what you choose to make important. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.